Substitutions Please, a show about food and the things people do to it. I'm Noah. How green was my basil McKinnon?
And I'm Louisa. Pine nuts roasting on an open fire heron.
And what food are we talking about this week, Louisa?
You could probably guess from the ingredients we gave you the clues about, but this week we are talking about pesto.
Which is about as far away from Norwegian, hello, Mr. Listener, I gave you all the clues, as it could possibly get.
We joke about if you give certain people an exciting food, it would kill them instantly. I think you could maybe kill some of those Norwegians with pesto.
I don't know.
Pesto alla Genovese.
Have you seen some Norwegian food? I think that could go both ways.
That's fair.
At any rate, pesto. What is pesto?
Here's the thing. It's a bit complicated in that, like salsa, it's kind of a general word for...
Here we fucking go again.
A lot like salsa, it's a general word for a type of condiment, basically. Specifically, what we've chosen to talk about is pesto alla Genovese, which is a paste made of primarily basil leaves, fresh basil, with garlic, pine nuts, cheese, usually Parmesan or Pecorino Romano, olive oil, and salt. Those are the ingredients. You blend them up as finely as possible to make this paste, and then you can use that in all kinds of applications. For sandwiches, that's great on pasta or, you know, to make bruschetta, anything like that.
And I think it's important to note that right off the bat because, so pesto is one of the oldest Italian condiments, basically. There's evidence of it existing or things like it existing literally all the way back to the Romans. And this isn't like that commenter a few weeks ago who talked about his grandmother's shitty little Roman village that's been falling down the side of a mountain.
Yep. I love that guy.
That's the best. But here we're talking, this is a little bit different. In fact, no less a poet than Virgil, the author of the Aeneid. Supposedly, his Juvenilia, the poems he wrote when he was a young man, you know, some young men, they draw dicks on things. If you're a Roman, you write about them instead. And even Virgil apparently didn't resist this based on the poems that are in the appendix, which is weird because that's not the part of the body that the appendix is in. But he wrote a poem in which a farmer puts together this thing called moretum, which actually is the same idea in that moretum also means ground down with a mortar, which is the same thing that pesto means.
It's funny, we got two names for the thing from the two parts of the equipment used.
That's right.
These two separate names.
Yeah, that's very true. And his is a little bit different, but there is garlic. There is, I think, parsley in his case. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, Virgil was from Mantua, question mark. Might need to do one of those quick...
I was going to say, I've seen some recipes that recommend adding parsley to your basil pesto that will help keep a nice green color.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we're going to get into other things that help keep a nice green color for your pesto.
Yep.
But having said that, his is parsley, it's garlic. It is a hard cheese because it's been salted, so there's no need to add extra salt. They specifically mentioned the hardness of the cheese and so on. Now, I haven't made that version because it includes... basically no ratios, and it was, if I'm honest, when I was reading it, it was kind of hard to tell what actually ended up going into the moretum on first reading.
Yeah, it's kind of, it kind of outlines what maybe you would serve with it as well. It's hard to tell.
And at one point, just literally what else is in the garden that he goes into to do this. Now, there is a later recipe from Columella, who was an agricultural writer, in book 12. And I have made that one. It kind of comes out like a ricotta or feta topping, the way that he does it. And to be fair,
okay,
that was a first draft, and I probably wouldn't do it the same way if I were to do it now. I would probably, number one, I would probably use a farmer's cheese, which is much more what Columella calls for. He calls for a fresh cheese, not a hardened one.
Oh, okay.
So it would be softer. And Columella is writing a little bit later. So, things might have changed. Tastes might have changed. it might literally be that Virgil is writing, and he does explicitly say he's writing as a poor farmer in this case, or describing a poor farmer, which is incredible pretense from Virgil.
You see a lot of that even nowadays. People write their little fantasies about how they think the poor people live.
Yeah, Virgil. Turns out he was the original cottage core. And then on the other side of things, Columella, I think, was much more unabashedly, I'm putting together these recipes that, you know, like my slaves make for me. So
yes.
He does explain, but there's a bunch of herbs that you can't use anymore. There's like rue and pennyroyal and so on.
Silphium. I can never remember how many syllables.
Silphium was dead by that
Silphium.
Point.
Okay. You hear that they found some in Turkey.
I did.
To digress slightly. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting. I'm excited.
It is. And there's some open question as to whether there wasn't already some and we just kept insisting that it had to be this more mystical herb that we otherwise couldn't find. But yes. Anyway, it is important to note that I think, you know, that there's a lot of different types of ground condiments with these leaves, herbs, nuts, cheese. Usually garlic is involved in almost all of them, and salt. It's important to note that you kind of have that tension between the breadth of possibilities and then the very specific Genoese pesto.
Yes, true. Because, yeah, as we'll see, people talk about substituting different types of fresh herbs or nuts to try to get the same qualities that this specific pesto has, but, you know, different flavors, obviously.
Is there anything, I think, do we know what we're talking about? Are we set here?
I think so, yeah.
Then let's find out what some people on the internet think pesto is.
Here's a comment. This is classic pesto Genoese, and although the proportions can be varied a bit, the ingredients may not be. It isn't pesto if walnuts are substituted for pinoli or parsley for the basil. There's no harm in making a sauce with walnuts, but do not call it pesto.
I'm glad that this person said there's no harm in making a sauce with walnuts.
They'll allow it.
Yeah. Up until then, I was worried that the pesto police was going to come hunt me down in their green uniforms.
This comment brings up, they're complaining about something people often do, which is say you can substitute walnuts for pine nuts because pine nuts are often quite expensive.
Yeah. And as we'll soon find out, you're going to kind of see an underlying narrative in a lot of the comments that we've selected for this episode, and it might be profitable to just kind of move right along here, because this other person says, pesto with walnuts? Nah. In Genova, we have a few jokes about it. No thanks. I'm not a squirrel. Just stick with pine nuts. The result is immensely superior. And cheese-wise, Parmesan is okay. 50% Parmesan, 50% Pecorino is heaven. Speaking about walnuts, there is a great walnut-based pasta sauce, also from Genova, Salsa di Noci, which, like pesto, requires no cooking and is really, really good. So, there we go. That's why there's no harm in making a walnut sauce.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's the Italians already do it, so it's allowed.
Yeah. Are you curious at all what this walnut-based pasta sauce is? Because I did not look this up beforehand.
I didn't either. I'm a little bit curious, but overall, I don't really like nuts in food that much. I know this is a shortcoming of mine, and I would probably have a greater food experience if I did. And I like peanut butter or almond butter, that sort of thing, but nuts and food, don't love it, so I have not looked up this walnut sauce, but it might be very good.
So apparently it's walnuts, garlic, butter, cream, olive oil, and then cheeses. So Parmigiano, Grana Padano. I don't hate that.
Yeah, it's got all the good ingredients in there, so can't complain about that.
Yeah, and I love the idea. So I'll come clean. I have often made pesto with walnuts or other nuts precisely because pine nuts are so expensive. And we'll get more into some other substitutions. And, you know, I understand that it is not what you're supposed to do. But we do have this sort of running gag where we specifically have Italians tell us what food, how food is not legitimate. And I think I haven't seen more. It's weird because there's definitely been more animosity with other foods.
Yeah, that's true. It's a bit complicated because a dish like this is kind of using what you have, basically. Like, it's a dish to make use of a lot of fresh basil to get the best out of it. And you're using the it's hard to write a recipe for. A lot of recipes will say, have, you know, a cup of olive oil on hand, add half of it, and then add more to get the consistency you want. So a lot of this is just like trial and error, trying to get exactly the results mm-hmm. you want out of it. So it is a bit strange that people are like, no, you absolutely can't use walnuts. It's like, yeah, that would be a different taste. But also, you're probably not, in other parts of the world, going to be getting Mediterranean pine nuts anyway. So you're not getting the true experience, whatever that would be, mm-hmm. anyway. So maybe walnuts are just fine.
And there's a point at which, especially if you toast the nuts that you're going to put into the pesto, mm-hmm. there's a point at which I have to imagine that the benefit of using straight up pine nuts is somewhat marginal.
Yeah, because they're quite subtle.
Yeah, and any nut, once toasted, I think gets a particular kind of flavor where you end up with, I'm not saying it'll be the same, mm-hmm. but I think it'll be within striking distance.
Yeah, it kind of gives you the same qualities you want. Speaking of making substitutions.
Yeah, there was one you mentioned that mm-hmm. a lot of people make, and this person is not going to let you do that. And they say, I would never put lemon juice in pesto. I have tried it before, and it ruins the pesto. Oh, and an Italian recipe sternly said no lemon juice as well.
This is a real sticking point, because I was surprised to find all these recipes do not call for lemon juice, because to me, that's an essential ingredient for something like this, which is a very salty, highly flavored condiment that enhances the flavor of other things. I feel like it needs some acidity in there.
And you mentioned something else. You mentioned that it's very common in the comments for people mm-hmm. to suggest it as an addition.
Yeah. And I also think it's a great addition. I mean, fresh herbs plus vinegar or lemon juice like you'd see in a chimichurri. I love that. Great combination. Great with a lot of richer foods.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you mentioned chimichurri specifically. So I grew up eating it a lot. There were a lot of Argentinian places we used to go to when I was a kid. And then I came up here, and I would say a few years ago, chimichurri kind of like, not exactly hit the big time, but it became like one of the condiments that you serve if you want to be taken like really seriously.
Oh, yes.
As a steakhouse yep. type place or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And every single one I have had up here has been garbage.
Oh, no.
Cold, cold garbage. So
that's the problem. That really depends on the quality of your fresh ingredients.
Yes, it does. And then we recently traveled. We went to New Orleans for a few days, and we went to a place that had had empanadas with kind of interesting ingredients, Cajun ingredients. But one mm-hmm. of the sauces with it was a chimichurri, and we tried it. And I was kind of apprehensive because I've been burned before. mm-hmm. And I tried it, and it was surprisingly good. And it's, yeah, if you take a condiment like that really seriously, it will come out great.
Yeah.
Now, I will admit, I don't like having a ton of acid to my pesto. But what I do like about adding lemon juice to it is that it does help keep it bright green.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. that is really nice. It helps keep that freshness to the basil. And if you add other herbs, it'll help kind of like, it'll help give them a little bit more resistance to any kind of blackening or browning that might otherwise happen. And, you know, usually if you make pesto, it's going to hang around for a few days. You don't tend to use it all in one go. So it's nice to have that.
Yeah, there's also another controversy with comment sections, which is, should you blanch your basil before making pesto or not? People are very emphatic about doing one or the other, and equally emphatic about saying this will prevent oxidation or this causes oxidation. Never do it. And there doesn't seem to be any consensus on that. So I don't know what the difference is. But basil is a very delicate herb. So
yes, it is.
It's hard to.
I assume you don't blanch yours, do you?
I do not. No, I haven't. It seems like that would cause it to wilt. And then some people say it does cause it to wilt. And then other people are saying, no, you're wrong. It prevents it wilting. So it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. The only green I regularly blanch is spinach for making cream spinach or palak paneer or whatever. And now with that, it does work very well for keeping a nice bright green color.
True.
But basil is even more delicate than that. If you did like whole leaves of it, maybe.
Yeah. I wonder if it's like the really hardy, like late summer basil. Maybe it would help with that. I'm not sure.
It might, because I mean, I usually use baby spinach for a lot of these things. Or even if it's a more full leaf cooking spinach, even then it'll be quite delicate. And I mean, you blanch it. It's literally you put it in the boiling water, stir it a couple times, and as soon as all of it has caught green, you know, brightened up with that wet color that it gets after sitting there for just a few seconds, just pull it immediately with a spider or a colander. You don't let it sit there.
Yeah, definitely not.
I think if you gave it like a quick bath, it might be okay. I don't know that I would be willing to risk it.
Yeah, you see a lot of people talking about the science of it in a way that I don't think is quite true. I think they just want it to be true because they'll say, blanch your basil. That gets rid of the compounds that cause it to turn black in the fridge. I don't think there's any science behind that. That
don't
just sounds
think
good.
That's true. But if you're listening to this and you do know this for sure, then please do tell us. That would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be.
Okay, let's keep going with this. Well, actually, this is, I think we may still be in close-minded town. I don't know, but yeah. I think you're about to take a left turn out of there.
Yeah, we're starting to get some interesting riffs on pesto with this one. I make my own pesto, as above, but with some sweet butter and fresh parsley added. But the best I've ever eaten was given to me by an ancient Italian lady who made it by hand in a mortar. She used the usual ingredients, but also added a small amount of fresh mint and pepperoncini. Heavenly.
What? Italians using mint and pepperoncini in their pesto? Sacrilegious. This lady needs to be brought before the Inquisition.
Exactly.
L'Inquisizione.
Yeah, people get very into the idea that a lot of what they imagine, this idealized rustic cooking, you must do it this way. But the thing about rustic cooking is you do it with whatever you have on hand that's best. So, yeah, I'm not surprised someone used mint. That sounds like it would be a nice addition for a lot of dishes. Pepperoncini is a little bit surprising to me, but it's very salty and sour, and I could see how that would be a nice addition too.
We were talking about spinach the last time, and I had to use a lot of spinach recently. I had to make a bunch of salads, and I found it a surprisingly nice ingredient. It was, you know, dress the spinach with a kind of just a mustardy vinaigrette type thing. And once it wilted in the vinaigrette, got that, like, you know, massage acid kind of texture. Then threw in a bunch of pepperoncini and, for me, olives. And in one case, just cubes of feta, little tiny cubes. And it was really good. I was kind of shocked because I'd only ever really had pepperoncini on, you know, like a sub sandwich or something like that.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. I like to slice them up and put them in like a pasta salad, an Italian style.
Yeah.
They had a good note in something like that, too.
Yeah, so I was also a little bit surprised to see them. Also, I think they would be I feel like you'd find them hard to grind in a mortar.
True. Yes, I was wondering about that as well.
But if it's maybe this ancient Italian lady has some secrets that we don't know about.
Exactly. I do like this person, separate from their anecdote about the ancient Italian lady. They say they've tried making it with butter, sweet butter, so I'm assuming they mean unsalted, and fresh parsley. Parsley, I understand. The butter makes me think it turns into a different type of sauce than a pesto.
Yeah, at that point, you've made a bread topping.
Yeah, basically. I bet it's delicious on pasta, though.
Oh, absolutely. You've basically made, yeah, you've made, God, garlic, cheese, salt. If you assume that they're replacing the olive oil with the butter, parsley, you just made scampi.
Ah, it sounds good.
Ugh, yeah. I'm talking myself around to this.
Mm-hmm.
Is this where I admit? So I used to make, I would never claim that this was pesto, to be clear. But when I was in college, I don't know if I've mentioned this before on the show. When I was in college, I used to make, my parents gave me one of those Nutribullet type blenders.
Oh, yeah.
And what I used to make in that and put on bread, it was a bunch of basil, usually fresh. Sometimes if we had parsley or another fresh herb floating around, we'd use that. Salt, pepper, garlic, and then usually a bunch of Asiago cheese.
Oh, okay.
And it was like halfway between pesto and a pizza cheese kind of thing. Like the cheese definitely predominated more than it would for a pesto. But it was really, really nice on a what Wegmans used to have, batard bread, which they've discontinued, which is ironic because now they're the batards for doing that.
Yeah, get them.
Yeah.
Sounds really good.
Yeah.
A nice summer plate, just some bread, maybe grilled bread, and then a nice sauce like that. Delicious.
See, now that would be amazing if I could, you know, have that batard bread that, once again, they took away from me.
Exactly.
All right. Help me out here. Take me away from these reminiscences of when I had good bread available.
Let's see now. They would disown me in Italy, but after getting pine nut mouth a couple times, I've substituted cashews. Sounds crazy, but it's delicious.
I can't believe I'm dead serious when I ask this question, but what that pine nut mouth do?
No, this is a family show! This is the strangest thing I found reading about pesto, and I had never heard of this, and now I'm worried about myself in the future. But pine nut mouth, or pine syndrome, it's also called, seems to be a type of I was going to say allergic reaction, but all the articles I read were specific to say it's not an allergic reaction. A type of reaction where after eating certain species of pine nuts, for the next 2 days up to 2 weeks, you will have a strong, bitter, metallic taste in your mouth. No matter what you eat at all times, including water. And this sounds terrible.
I would jump off a cliff.
I can't imagine. Although a lot of people, a lot of articles I read, the person started by saying they got this, had no idea what was happening to them, freaked out, found out more about it. Yeah, the thought that maybe this would just be the rest of your life as soon as it happened, ugh, the fear of that is so terrible.
I already got to do that because I had COVID a couple years ago, and I remembered losing my taste and thinking, you know, some people haven't gotten theirs back yet, and they had it last year. So what happens now kind of thing, and we're fine, you know, but oh my God.
Yeah. And then on top of that, to have it be bitter, to make anything you eat taste bitter. And from what I've read, if you eat sugar to try to counteract the bitter taste, it makes it worse. So it's just unimaginably bad.
And you mentioned, you said certain species of pine nuts. So is there a way to dodge pine nut mouth?
Apparently, yes. It seems to combat the rising costs of pine nuts, which are very expensive. Certain suppliers started using two new types of pine trees that they hadn't harvested from before in the 2010s. And these are species native to China. So if you want to be sure to avoid having this syndrome happen to you, if you get pine nuts that are either sourced from North America or Europe or the Mediterranean, then you are fine.
I feel like I have to say this. It is very, it's not very surprising to me that to cut costs, you know, they'd go find other trees. But this isn't like a universal thing, right? In some sense, this is the interaction of those specific species of pine nuts with specific people?
That's the hard part to figure out. Like I said, they insist that it's not an allergic reaction, but there's no way they've been able to find yet, as far as I could research, to find who it's going to affect and how for how long. So at any time, it could just happen to you if you're having one of these species of pine nuts.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty worrisome. I guess what I was trying to think of is, you know, we had that discussion a couple weeks ago about MSG and how the explosion of quote-unquote Chinese restaurant syndrome, which not a thing, sort of didn't stop people eating Chinese-American food, but it sure made them willing to insult it while they were eating it.
Yeah, exactly.
Much the same way I feel like it's hard because, yes, these are, from your research, these are native to the region, but this is very much a case of people wanting to, you know, provide cut-rate goods, which,
yeah,
you know.
From what I could tell, I don't think native people who lived where these pine trees grew ever ate these pine nuts. They just are close enough to the pine nuts people have eaten in other parts of the world, and I guess not poisonous, so that they just decided that they would be a good substitute.
Uh-huh.
But apparently now we see why they're not such a good substitute.
Yeah. Maybe you should have been key to ask the people living around there, like, hey, do you ever eat the nuts off of this thing? Which is the one time that sentence can be asked in a completely, like, serious way.
Oh, boy, yes. But I'm glad we can have our listeners find out about this without contracting this syndrome, because I want to avoid it personally. So
same.
I hope you out there are able to avoid this.
This is the first time I've considered myself extremely lucky to live in as Italian a town as I do, because there is no way in hell I'm going to run into this issue in probably the next decade.
Fair enough.
But also, you know, if you or a loved one has contracted pine nut mouth, you may be eligible for compensation. How to get that, I have no freaking clue, but, you know, I'm sure somebody will get on that.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so we've now started talking, we're now talking about substituting the nuts, we're talking about adding lemon juice, we're talking about pepperoncini. Mm-hmm. Here's somebody who is very open-minded about what they do with their pesto, and more power to them, for the most part. Because of aging taste buds, joy, I add a few anchovies with some of their oil, a few minced bird's eye peppers, and some mid-range balsamic. Also up the garlic content. Not for everyone. You have just made fish sauce.
I love the slight awareness at the end, not for everyone.
Yeah. I would strongly argue, not for me.
Yeah, it's a lot of things. I mean, fine for them if they want to do that. Great. But you're getting kind of away from the balance of what pesto is when you're adding so many other things, particularly strong flavored things like balsamic
vinegar. I was going to say, yeah, pesto's whole thing is that it's very delicate. It's very subtle. It does its best work when it's sitting on very plain pasta or very simply flavored things like you mentioned bread. Great for that because, you know, there's or fresh vegetables, like even dreaded tomatoes, even stuff like that. You can really elevate it because you've got very simple, distinct flavors, and then you're adding a set of, again, very subtle, very complementary flavors. Anchovies, bird's eye peppers. These are things that punch you in the face. They are not subtle at all, and they're not meant to be. And they're great at that.
Yeah. I mean, this person does say they have aging taste buds, so I get the idea of, okay, I want more salt, more sour. I want to be able to really taste these flavors. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're not getting a whole lot of the original pesto flavor, I would think.
You know what probably would help with helping the aging taste bud problem?
What's that?
Some lemon juice.
Exactly.
That would probably help brighten up, which I mean, they are kind of trying to do by adding the balsamic. That kind of makes sense. But balsamic introduces so many other things, that great must and that other kinds of Those fruitier flavors. I'm not sure.
A few people mentioned, like this person mentioning balsamic vinegar, but a few other people mentioned, oh, put a little teaspoon of sugar into your pesto. That'll help cut down on any bitterness. And I don't think that's a good idea, personally. I think that would dull the flavors too much. It just sort of cover things up with sugar. I don't like that idea.
Yeah, in that case, would you probably have more of an issue than anything there is probably you're getting bad basil.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we have someone who really likes to improvise.
Oh, God.
They say, same proportions work with all sorts of things. I've used your recipe straight and also swapped in dandelion greens, watercress, hazelnuts, cashews, and manchego. It's a great formula. They come back later to say, come to think of it, I never add salt. The cheese provides enough.
You know, when we started these comments, I was pretty sure I was more on the side of the people who treat pesto kind of like a ship of Theseus thing.
Yes.
You can swap out components and mix things in and so on. But and even the previous comment didn't really faze me in that regard. Maybe because they specifically said, you know, I'm doing this because I'm having trouble tasting very delicate flavors, very subtle flavors, so I want to bring them out more. Okay, fine. But this is ridiculous.
It really is. This is something I noticed other commenters say. They would casually say, like this person, I substituted dandelion greens. Or people would say, I made my pesto with spinach. I didn't use basil. I don't understand what flavor you're getting there, because the herb is the most important ingredient.
Green. You're getting green flavor.
So when people are saying, oh, well, I made spinach pesto, I guess what they're saying is they got something that tastes like garlic and cheese, which is nice, but that's it, right?
Again, you made Italian palak. That's what you made. Just own it. It's Yeah. And the thing about it too is if you're making it with something that you eat as that you can eat as a salad green, because nobody is making a salad. I mean, I guess caprese salad success, but you're not making a salad in which you're serving a fucking bowl of basil and then
that would overpower everything.
That doesn't work. Nobody wants their entire salad to taste like licorice, including me. So that doesn't make sense, obviously. But if you're making something with like a pesto with spinach or dandelion greens, honestly, at that point, like toss in a couple more things and you have a salsa verde or you can make a spinach cream for that could work as a pasta sauce. Like there's a million other things you can do with it. Just don't make it a pesto.
Yeah.
It that's not what it's there for.
Yeah, I also am a bit confused. Yes, I don't understand.
I guess I can think spinach specifically, I could kind of see working if it's the right cheese and the right nuts and everything. But
then that's what you're tasting. You're not tasting the aromatic flavor of the greens because it really doesn't have much spinach.
That's the thing. Like I could almost see it working, but it would have to be very oh man, you'd have to be getting it straight from the farm, I think at that point. It would have to be very specific kinds of spinach, which is why I don't trust this. Dandelion greens, I guess I maybe slightly more trust because those do tend to be a little bit more.
They have a flavor. I don't care for it myself, but yeah. I do understand that. Other people mentioned like carrot tops, and I can actually see that because they do have a nice herbal flavor, and we don't use as much in cooking.
No, you don't. Hazelnuts I don't hate as an idea here. I'm not a fan either, but I would certainly try it. Watercress, yeah. I don't think I've had enough to know.
It has like mild peppery flavor, but to me it's just mostly a soft green flavor. I don't, nothing special.
And then manchego.
I mean, it is a hard cheese. It's got that going for it.
It is. Yeah, it's not that far away. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it is sheep's milk, which the Pecorino is already, so there's really nothing you can say about it that you can't say about the cheeses that are already there.
That's true.
Yeah.
I do love a manchego.
Yeah, same. All right. Well, let's talk So we've gone from the people who will accept absolutely no substitutions, please or not, to the people who apologetically switch in and out some ingredients, to the people who are happy to treat their pesto as, well, as this last comment said, this most recent comment said, a formula. We'd like to end on a triumphant note, so we submit this comment to you. I followed the recipe exactly, and it came out great. My first-generation Italian fiancé said it the pesto tasted like her father's, which is about as high praise as I can get. I'm not going to lie, it feels good to get a win over the Axis powers of Poppy and Nana. What the fuck?
Tell us how you really feel about your Italian in-laws.
Does this person think the fiancé is not going to see this?
You haven't been calling my family the Axis powers online, have you? Oh, boy. I really don't know what to say. It's just so strange. It turns a nice little anecdote like, oh, I impressed my fiancé so much. She liked it as much as she likes her father's beloved dish. But to take it this far, it's really something.
Yeah, you start reading that comment and you think, oh, this is one of those where, you know, again, Italian. It's exactly like with Texans. You tell the entire world if you're Texan. You tell the entire world if you're dating a Texan. And now we know that you also have to tell the world if you're getting married to an Italian.
There's an extra layer there, I feel like. If you're from Texas, you just say, I'm from Texas, etc., etc. But when you're in America and you're saying, my family's Italian, you always have to say, no. I know what you're thinking. No, my family's not from Chicago. My Italian family from Italy. I have receipts. I can prove that they're real Italian and not Italian American.
Yeah.
It's funny.
And then just to come out of nowhere, and one might say, take a far-right slide at the end of the comment into straight-up calling your fiancé's father and presumably grandmother literally Benito Mussolini.
Oh, boy. Terrible.
I think this person has watched way too much Golden Girls is what's happening here.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah. They're just going to slip in a little lighthearted joke about the Axis powers of World War II.
Yeah, because that's what Sophia Petrola did all the time, right? So, it's fine. Ugh. You know, the Garibaldi Book of Records, et cetera, et cetera. Do we have anything? Do we have any of these jokers left to talk about?
I don't think we do. I think we've covered all of it.
In that case, well, you talked about lemon juice. Is there anything else you always make sure to do with your pesto? Maybe, or if there's not something that you like to do with the pesto itself, maybe how do you usually serve it?
Mm-hmm. I like to serve it with pasta, especially. I find it usually does pretty well even cold, so sometimes I will mix that into a pasta salad with, you know, tomatoes and mozzarella and just... That's all I need. It's delicious. I realize reading these comments, it's helped me because I've tried to make traditional pesto pretty close to these recipes, although I have added lemon juice. And now I'm thinking I could probably have some basil and some of another herb, and I could probably use something other than pine nuts. Who needs them is my new philosophy. So I'm going to start getting more creative next summer.
Yeah, that's you. Yeah, being free of pine nut mouth for the rest of your days.
God, I hope so.
We in our backyard had a few years ago, had a pretty good crop of chives and wild onions, and mm-hmm. We had both, to be clear. And we pulled those and we made pesto out of them with basil as mm-hmm. part of it, just substituted some of the weight. And that was really good the first year. It went well on everything. So we tried it again, and the second time when they came back, they were very reedy
Oh, yeah. They get kind of tough.
Yeah. So we haven't tried that again. But if you have access to that through a farm market or something along those lines, fresh chives, fresh ramps.
I was going to say, ramps, I bet, in season, in the spring. Absolutely.
Wild garlic, wild onions, anything like that could be really, really good. I haven't tried it with scallions, which I think would be too sharp. And at that point, you're basically making, you're getting real close to like almost a pico de gallo type of thing, situation. But it might be worth trying out. I mean, I'm still, as long as you're sticking closer to the, I'm going to switch out, you know, the pecorino for manchego kind of side of things. I'm definitely on the side where I'm more ingredient neutral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you got to be careful in what you do, because the fact that you're making this out of fresh ingredients, if they have to be really good quality or they are going to bite you in the ass. Nobody wants to end up with their pesto stuck between their teeth.
Yes, exactly. I'm starting to think you could do a pretty good job with other, the really juicy fresh herbs, the ones that you don't really cook with that you put in afterwards. Dill. Cilantro. I feel like you could make a very good pesto with those. It would be hard to balance some of the other flavors, like what kind of cheese to use, maybe. But a lot of potential there.
Yeah, probably. Especially dill, which like basil, is has a very cooling flavor.
Yes.
Because there's a reason people like to do mint in pesto. Mm-hmm. It's also in that family of herbs that provide kind of that cooling sensation. So you could definitely do that. I think that would be great. Cilantro could be interesting.
Yeah, that's more of a salsa verde type of thing, really.
But it might work.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It could definitely work.
Anything else we need to tell people?
I don't think so. So I think I would just like to say thank you for listening, everyone. And if you enjoyed it, please tell your friends.
If you'd like to follow us on social media, we're on Twitter and co-host at NoSubsPlease. And we're on Mastodon at NoSubsPlease at Mastodon.online. If you have any comments you want us to go after in a future mailbag episode, get your own little trumpet. Or if there's anything else you'd like to suggest, you can talk to one of us on social media, or you can hit us up at NoSubstitutionsPLS@gmail.com. That's NoSubstitutionsPLS@gmail.com.
Until next time, we have been No Substitutions, Please, and like the best cooks, we will leave you wanting more.